Hello, listeners. It's Jose, a.k.a. The Region Nerd, and we're recording in the lovely studios of Lakeshore Public Media to bring you the latest discussion on everything pop culture, from Comic-Cons to drag shows, horror movies to hip-hop, and everything in between. Take a break from politics and hang out with us right here on Region Nerd Alert. Director of the weird and intriguing horror movie Hereditary, Ari Aster brings us to a surreal folk cult in Sweden to give us a terrible, beautiful, and unique take on what we know as the horror thriller genre. This movie inspired us here at Region Nerd Alert to discuss our favorite psychological horror films slash shows, etc., and how Midsommar is reaching that cult-like following very quickly. This is Region Nerd Alert. Hey, how's everyone doing today?
Splendid.
Fine, yes, just fine.
Cool. Thank you for joining me, everyone. Then this very hot and balmy, Wednesday?
Yeah, I'm straight dying in here.
It's getting pretty hot. It's all this equipment.
It's not too bad in here.
Feels great.
Unless I'm not wearing jeans.
Oh, yeah, you're straight up short in it. Basketball shorts, tank top.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sunglasses. But quick introductions today. I am Joey Nerd Alert, a.k.a. Joey, and today, as you heard from the intro, we're going to be talking about the new movie that just came out, Midsommar, and basically psychological horror slash thriller and the genre as a whole. But to my immediate left is a new person.
To the immediate left.
Same person, new seat today.
Oh, it feels good to be in this seat.
How's it feel?
Oh, it's great. My name's Mike, by the way.
Mike. And Twitter, do you have anything to...
Thick Boy, 3 C's, 3 I's, Twitter, Instagram, and Singularity Photography. Check it out, my photography.
There we go. Fast, concise, perfect. All right, to his immediate left, we have...
Skyler.
In the far inferior seat.
Never use Twitter, follow me anyway. This is the inferior seat.
And what is your Twitter handle?
Fat Low End.
Nice.
Never forget that, yeah.
Never forget that.
The Olatho on Instagram and Olatho on SoundCloud.
Olatho.
Check it out. O-L-A-T-H-O-E.
And he is also the intro song you hear at the beginning of this, by the way.
Oh, snap.
So check it out. He has some great music. And to his immediate left, we have...
I'm Lexi Dukes.
Lexi Dukes.
Why did I give my... I always give my full name.
You do. If you ever went first, I feel like everyone would give their full name.
I wouldn't.
We have yet to hear... Oh, I think...
No, we have.
They just have to
decode
it. Episode
3, I think.
Nope.
But anyways, as you heard, it's going to be about horror, psychological horror specifically. Basically, unique scares, and also the brand new movie that just came out by Ari Aster. Hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Midsommar. And if you want to listen to this podcast, you have to listen live. No. we're actually on NPR One. Right now, and pretty soon we're going to be on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play.
I did not know that.
Yeah, real soon, hopefully. So yeah, you can listen to it on everything there. But on NPR One, just go to Lakeshore Public Radio and the 89.1 FM. You can actually make us your home station, and then you'll get updates for Regionally Speaking and All Things Considered, and not All Things Considered, Regionally Speaking. And Read a Nerd Alert and Let's Eat, Midwest Beat, and plenty more. So, yeah, all your local programming. But anyway, let's get started. What are your guys' thoughts on the horror genre? Do you like it very much?
Love it?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely all about it.
I actually like it
a lot more than any other genre.
Really?
If we're talking like straight horror, yeah, no, I'll watch horror over any other genre.
Now, if my memory serves me, you're really into body horror, right?
Yes. Any body horror and psychological horror, actually.
Okay. And then do you want to explain to us what body horror is a little bit?
Body horror is anything coming from inside the human body, like just the human body being distorted and destroyed and just torn, like being stretched to just weird, creepy angles.
Graphic.
Yeah, it's very graphic.
Gore.
The Thing is actually a really good body horror movie.
Mm, okay.
The best.
Speaking of body horror, there is quite a bit of that in Midsommar. Mm. I won't give too much away, but it does hold that R rating pretty well.
I don't know if I would necessarily say there was quite a bit, though. I feel like the scenes where it did play on body horror were just enough.
I will say, yeah, it wasn't like every single scene was like that.
It's also not like a flash, though. Like, it gives you your helping. And like,
yeah.
When the food is hot, there's a lot of food there.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. And I'll definitely talk more about that as we talk about the scenes a little bit. Not too much spoilers. Like, there, spoiler alert, there will be some things if you, like me, and you enjoy watching the movie and finding out things for yourself. Don't listen. But if you, you know, just like a little more than the trailer before you watch it, then this is a good listen to. But first, and I'm also apologize to Mike. I know he didn't get a chance to watch it. But hopefully you do. I'll see it with you.
Oh, I'll see it. I'm going to see it.
I will.
Because it looks real interesting.
I'll definitely see it with you.
And definitely worth a second watch.
Yeah. And it is, what is it, a 2-hour movie?
Two and a half.
Two and a half.
Yes,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
2.5-hour movie. So it is long, but it is definitely worth.
I was going to say, one of my favorite movies is Shawshank Redemption. So.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So you're used to the.
I'm good.
All right. So, so basically, this first part is directed to the people who've seen it a little bit, or the whole thing, I guess. What are your first thoughts of the movie? Like, if you had to be the critic, what would be your first, like, little rating?
So I actually think that this should be considered for an Oscar. And actually, I was reading, and I can't quite remember the website, but I was reading that it very well may be considered for one. Some of the Oscar films are starting to come out around this time. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is coming out. And so if Ari Aster is looking to get some of that recognition from the Academy, he released at a really good time. But the reason I say that is because I love horror films. I am not like Mike. I'm much more into psychological horror than I am into body horror, and that's why I sort of interjected and said, well, it's not a ton of body horror, because I feel like when the whole film is just a slasher, just gory, I'm not scared anymore. At that point, I feel like I'm watching an Operation.
And a fun little tidbit, Ari Aster actually meant for this to be a really gory slasher film
that's
when he was first thinking about it. But I guess he went through a pretty bad breakup, and he completely changed the movie.
And I know we said we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I feel like it was definitely reflected, too.
Yeah, and so I really think that some of the things that the Academy looks for, the acting, the cinematography was absolutely incredible. And also those think pieces. I think that all of those elements are definitely in this film, and so I would not be shocked if they gave a look at it for, honestly, Best Actress and Best Cinematography.
She did do very well. Florence Pugh, I believe that's her name.
Yep, that's her.
Pugh, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She played Danny, and she did a fantastic job.
Very good.
Very believable. But what about you? Oh, before that, out of 5 stars, what would you give it?
I loved it. I would give it 5. This was definitely my kind of a movie.
Okay, cool. Mr. Skyler?
Definitely 5 stars.
Okay.
Throwing that one out there. The very beginning of the movie is hard for me to watch. It's slower paced, but it sets everything up perfectly. And then the big event that happens in the beginning of the movie makes me feel a type of way. Mm-hmm. And I hate feeling that way.
Right.
But the fact that it made me feel like it did its purpose, obviously, like it got the emotion out of me.
Yeah,
it made me.
It gets you out of that. Like, you're not watching a movie. Like, you're feeling something, like an experience.
Yeah, like it made me uncomfortable, which is like what horror movies are supposed to do. You know, like supposed to make you uncomfortable. But the way that it like sets itself up for the whole later part of the film, like when you get to where you're going, like again, I had no idea what this movie was supposed to be about. Coming from Hereditary, I thought it was going to be a little more on the like demonic-ish type side, more spiritual and less like, oh, we're just, it seems so real. Like everything they did was based in reality.
Yes.
Like nothing was fictitious.
At all.
Everything
really
was obtainable. Mm-hmm.
And I love that because one of the criticisms I've had when we've done podcasts in the past is I hate it when they take it to an otherworldly realm because I just feel like it's so overdone. Now, I mean, I know that's very contrary to Hereditary. Hereditary, I know, does deal in the supernatural, which I'm
In a very good way, though.
In a very good way. I feel like when done right, it's excellent. But it's not very often done right. So I was very impressed that this movie sort of dealt with things that man could do to man. And I think that that's much scarier to me than the idea of something ghostly taking over. Is the idea of what we can do to each other horrifies me way more.
It definitely took it to the extreme with this movie too, because even though you don't really, and I'm sorry if this is a huge spoiler, but you don't really get like that supernatural element, it almost feels otherworldly the way, because you're in a completely separate like little country, or and within that country it's like it took them forever to drive through like land.
Hours and hours.
They were in
Sweden. Yeah, it was supposed to be like a Swedish folk cult.
I will say that there is a supernatural element in that. And it's funny because it's actually dealing with doctoral students who are writing their theses?
Theses.
And the thesis is on like Nordic folk rituals and things of that nature. So I have taught a high school class on mythology, and there was quite a bit of like Nordic mythology in there. So if you kind of know your background, then you do get a supernatural element. But the thing about the you know, mythology is that these are things that man came up with. And again, so much scarier to me, the fact that we came up with these sacrifices and this and that, that's where horror really, you know.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, you could like believe like it could go either way. Like, oh, you can say there's definitely a supernatural element, but I know there's a huge part of it is also the psychedelics, like the drugs that they take. So you're not quite sure, like, is that really happening? Is she really like speaking an entire language she never learned?
I was going to say, the whole film is so psychedelic, and that's the best way to like.
Yeah, to leave it at that. Like,
psychedelic.
It's you don't necessarily like, you know what's like real, but at the same time, like, you don't believe it's like actually happening.
And like the editing and the like
the CG.
The CG in it like is so subtle, but like some of the best CG I've ever seen, because it's so subtle, but it constantly plays in your mind. Like there's certain scenes where like the trees in the background, like just blowing around, is normal, obviously, but it looks weird. It doesn't look
like
right.
Or like her headpiece, like part of her headpiece is just like
the flowers.
Oh, loved that.
Yeah, the flowers pulsating, and like everything's so tiny and so subtle, but like it sets you in
this
in the
movie
space.
Is definitely a trip. Like it is definitely a trip, because, and another thing that this movie does too, it puts you as like you're one of the friends going. Because there's a lot of scenes where they'll look, like, there's a couple of scenes that they look back at the camera. There's a few scenes, like, you're in the conversation. It's not like a behind-the-shoulder shot. Like, you're... It's
part of the circle.
Right, right. And it's a lot of scenes are like that, and I absolutely love it. And then a part of that is, like, the psychedelics are happening while the story's going on. So it's like, there's no, like, whose perspective are we looking through? And it's almost like your own perspective.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what I absolutely love, that aspect of it. Because I was like looking at everything, I'm like, man, what's going on?
The film does cause a lot of self-reflection, and I think that Aster sort of invites you into that self-reflection using these cinematic moments like that. I know you and I, Jose, after the film, we talked about that moment where there's a little boy in the commune who turns around and looks directly at the camera and beckons to you, and you're like, heck no, I'm not going anywhere with you, kid.
And that was like sort of after like the psychedelic scene, because there's one like specific scene like in the beginning where it's kind of like the turning point. Like they arrive at the camp, they're saying their hellos, their introductions, and it's very real too. Like all the introductions seem for the sole purpose of them meeting each other. Like usually you can tell like little things by the way, like, ooh, there's the villain because of his brow and the way he's like mentioning this. But like, it seems like a very genuine, just two people meeting and you don't know where it's going
to
go.
Well, and in the, to the point of the psychedelics and the reality of everything, just quite honestly, like, the things that I've read about people taking psychedelics, like, there's a great book, Go Ask Alice, if you're interested in, you know, what hallucinogens do to the life of a young person, where she describes what it's like to be on LSD or be on, and, I mean, the honestly, this was at points, like, for the record, I've never taken drugs, everyone.
Right, but, right, for the record.
But for the record. But from what I've read and what has been described to me, it does seem like this is one of the most accurate representations of a psychedelic trip that I've seen. And so, again, just back to that whole, like, it's, like, overly realistic sometimes.
As a person, for on the record, never done shrooms or LSD, it is extremely accurate.
I was going to say, I think everyone thinks it's going to be...
like you see bubbles and fairies and stuff.
Yeah, what's the Johnny Depp movie?
Fear and Loathing?
Everyone thinks it's going to be like Fear and Loathing, where everyone's raptors
lizard
in the casino,
people,
lizard people and stuff, and it's totally not. Like,
no, the way they portrayed it, like, spot on from what I read. But, so they basically get to the commune, and the shifting point is, like, when they take the psychedelics, the shrooms, I think. And that scene's kind of long, too.
It's very long shot.
Like, yeah, there's some comedy in there, but, like, there's a lot of just, like, sitting. Mm. And, like, she stares at her hand for a long time, and she's looking around. The guy in the background's freaking out, like, everyone has to sit like this. Please, everyone has to sit.
Please, someone lay down.
Yeah, please, someone lay down with me. And, like, she does her little thing, and then she's out for, like, hours, and everyone's leaving. But that isn't the only, like, time we see that. It's just when it's, like, first introduced and what it does to you. And to put it, like, basically, I feel like when they first take, like, the shrooms, you know they're taking drugs, and okay, this is them on drugs, ha ha ha.
Yeah.
But then when stuff starts hitting the fan, you see them take stuff, but things are still happening.
Well,
and it's like
the environment's still weird, but, like,
you don't know what's
the
what's
scenarios have changed, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't know whether they've been drugged or not at some point.
Exactly.
I mean, at some point, you're like, so are they high? Or, like,
mm-hmm. They take the tea? Like, what's in the tea?
What's in the tea? Like, and then the way that the commune presents it is so just like, take it. It's good for your joints. You know?
It'll bring down your inhibitions or something like that. Yeah.
Like, it's medicine.
But, yeah, they get to the commune, and they have, like, the festival. I think it's, like, a 9-day festival, and that's the course of the movie, I believe. Like, they take you through the 7 or 9 days. I can't remember. And then, you know, it ends. There's stuff going on. I don't want to give too much away. But I definitely want to touch on the fantastic acting of everyone.
Yes.
Like, it's not only, like, great movie acting. Like, I was, like, I believed a lot of it, like, that they were really bringing it home. Well, for me, in my opinion. But, yeah, like, Florence Pugh, who played Danny, the girlfriend, like, she had a major, major role in this. The way she acted as, like, the trauma that was given to her.
Yes.
And, like, her crying scenes. Like, it wasn't, like, a pretty girl cry. Like,
oh, it was ugly.
Ugly crying. And it made that kind of made me not feel uncomfortable, but, like, sad.
So,
like, I was like, holy moly, like, laugh it off a little bit, but then I was like, man, she is, like, really crying.
Part of the horror for me was part of the psychological horror was the relationship between Danny and her boyfriend was so, for our generation, like, so real to me. Because you see these scenes where she's legitimately suffering and she's going through this anguish, and it's something that I feel like a lot of young women experience, this fear of being the overly clingy girlfriend. But you know physically that you're going through something and that you need someone there. So naturally, you gravitate towards your boyfriend, who you want to be there because, hey, you and I are supposed to be in a committed relationship.
And another thing, that was, like, her only person. Like, other than her other sister, I think, that's the only person she talked to.
Because she seemed like she was far from her family.
Yeah, it did seem that way. And so playing on that fear as a woman in the 21st century. I don't want to be too clingy. I don't want to be too clingy. And then it flashes to the scenes with the boyfriend and his friends, and all of her worst nightmares are coming true.
Yeah.
He's really sitting there, like, talking about, man, I don't know how much longer I want to be with her, and this, and it's just a little too real. And as many horrific things as go that go on in this movie, I think one of the terrifying things was this idea of a failing relationship in the 21st century and being alone and suffering with mental illness, and that I don't know, it was from a female perspective, it was just like really.
I can only imagine, like, I know like males feel this too, but like it's really prominent in like today's females too, and how like there's definitely a culture that goes with it, and the fact that you could see the other side, like you see her panicking. I hope I'm not too clingy. I really need him, but I don't want to like to bother him. And then to see that other side, ooh, she is bothering him. Like, oh, he's just.
Well, and it creates.
Can't say words.
It creates for us. Can't say words.
Fooling around with his friends. That sounds.
I feel like it creates for us a very real villain. With it, again, especially for the. And I'm speaking from a female perspective because I identify as a female. But it creates a very modern villain. Like the. Trying to find a good word for it that's appropriate, but sort of the nonchalant boyfriend or the into himself boyfriend, the man that's not there for you. It's
the butt of a boyfriend.
The butt of a boyfriend, yeah, that we all sort of villainize via social media, right? We all have words for it, but this actually creates a real villain out of that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like themes like that, and they're going to this creepy, murderous cult, and the main antagonist of the film is the boyfriend.
The boyfriend,
you know, like it's definitely some powerful stuff. Definitely recommend it. Midsommar, by the way, we are talking about the movie Midsommar. It's a new psychological horror film that came out by Ari Aster. It's a 2.5-hour runtime. Definitely go see it, everybody. But, yeah, so to go back through different themes and stuff, they touch on elderly culture a little bit and basically assisted suicide, or I don't know if they call it euthanasia for humans. But
same thing.
Same deal.
And they definitely touch upon that. Don't want to give too much away, but you, like, your logic brain, like, thinks, like, oh, of course you're not going to help out with something like that, and laws are in place that are against that. But, and again, you see some really graphic things, but
I've always thought to myself too, I'm like, man, I don't want to get so old to where I get dementia and someone has to care for me. Like, I want to live, care for myself.
They leave at the ripe age of like what?
72 or 76 or something like that.
And then the way they explain it, it's like, okay, you can either think, yeah, they're crazy, like, that's a cult folk Swedish thing, like, terrifying, or you can definitely, like, if you have, like, an open enough mind, like, think, they're making some good good points there.
Lived a full life.
Yeah, they're completely consensual, like, again, I'm trying to sidestep, like, pure spoilers, but basically they touch upon it, very relatable. Make a convincing argument for a lot of things. Another thing was the soothsayer, the person who was writing down the record.
So their priest is actually a person who is intellectually disabled and born disfigured. And so I think, like, the three of us, we talked about just how many things it makes us question in our society, because at the end of the day, right, this is a horror film about a commune, and so at the end of the day, you're going into it thinking that these people are going to be completely vilified, and you're going to leave there thinking, like, oh, this is Jonestown. Like, these people
are
wackadoo.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I was going into it. Like,
but then you leave, and you're like, well, shoot, maybe we're Jonestown. Like, maybe, you know, I don't know. Sky, if you want to...
Yeah, there's definitely, like, when you're going in there, it's like, what is the word I'm looking for? It's almost like a untouched culture vibe. Like us as, I guess, Americans or first world people, first worlders. I don't know what you want to call us. But
first worlders.
Like when you see like still like indigenous tribes, you think, oh, like they're not necessarily beneath us, but like they're not as civilized. But when you, this film sort of like plays with the idea, like it doesn't matter like what you have, what technology you have, like it's culture. And sometimes
they still live their own lives. Exactly. They have their own way of life.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want to touch it. Like sometimes and you can't touch it.
Beautiful architecture. I loved all of the buildings.
My gosh,
the buildings were so simple.
I want to shake the hand of the man that drove those nails.
It's like
or woman. Man or woman.
Oh, I love that. It's like what IKEA is trying to do, but actual Scandinavian furniture.
Pier 1 or something.
Right, Pier 1.
But, okay, so a couple more little things I want to touch on before I open up the board to general horror films. Like, I see you, Mike. Just the first little part of this was about this a little bit. But taking their take on, like, mourning and how you treat someone who has went through a very traumatic experience.
Yeah.
And I feel like they did a, going back to our generation, like, how people deal with that and first off, like what happens to the girlfriend in the beginning and how her boyfriend dealt with it. And you can kind of sense how awkward it was, mm-hmm. sort of, because once again, he was talking about going through a breakup and he was telling his friends, well, now I can't do it, you know, and he's comforting her, but it's mm-hmm. not genuine. And then you can definitely mm-hmm. tell, like, she's pouring out like her soul mm-hmm. and like you can tell like he's not, it's very awkward and
yeah.
not genuine.
I mean, there were, and that gets back to the things we do in our society. So, like, when people are mourning, I've seen it happen. At first, we're kind of like, oh, poor thing. And then it's sort of the Hamlet effect where it's like, okay, you've been grieving enough and nobody wants to be around so-and-so because so-and-so is constantly moping and constantly sad and constantly hemming and hawing, and it wasn't just the boyfriend, but really everybody around her was like, oh, it's awkward and nobody wants to be around all this death and decay.
It's like the biggest inconvenience
yes.
of the situation
yes.
was her on her friends or her boyfriend's friends and not that she just lost people.
Right.
And I feel like that was a huge point they really drove home. Like, everyone's like, oh, is she coming with us? Like, really? Like, mm-hmm. oh, my God, dude, like, ditch her or whatever. And to basically, like, flip it, like, how she was treated by the women of the cult.
Yeah, I loved mm-hmm. that.
And, it's this dual-sided coin. Like, you can go into it looking like, what are these crazy people doing with her? Like, mm-hmm. this is insane. Like, they're... I think it might be in the trailer, but like they're like screaming at the top yeah. of their lungs, basically.
All hooting and hollering.
Yeah, and out of context.
Hooting and hollering.
It's like out of context. It's like, okay, that's kind of, it's really weird and
yeah.
compared to us. But when you see the movie, it's like, it's almost beautiful.
It's and, gorgeous.
And they show the scene, and it's long for a reason, I think, because that scene's like, I think like 3 minutes long of just stuff
well,
going
people
on.
Breathing with her. I loved that it was a group of women breathing with her, and I told Skylar later, I was like, I kind of felt the feminist angle there. Like, she had been looking for all of this validation from this boyfriend, and a boyfriend that is really attached to our culture, and that's where she thought she needed to be, but it was this group of women whose ideas are totally, you know, off the rails and totally outside of what we would consider the norm that breathe with her, and just that, oh, I can't even, it was so
and
it's, so lovely.
And you can tell like how genuine they are, because they're like, there's tears coming down from their faces and they're screaming with her and like they're sobbing with her, and compared that to like her boyfriend saying they're there and looking off and just mm-hmm. almost like he's waiting for her to be done with her episode mm-hmm. they're living that with her and they're
feeling every bit of it.
They're like, you're not alone at all, and they're just like grasping her, and I won't give away too much, but
just feel like empathy was a big theme of the film, and
definitely.
there was a lot of breathing together. They even foreshadowed that big moment with her and these this group of women by, there was a scene where, and I don't know if you all noticed, but there was a baby in the background that had nothing to do with the dialogue that was going on in the foreground, but in the background there was a group of women hushing a baby, and the baby was crying, and they were all breathing with this small child. And
I definitely missed
that. I mean, it was really beautiful. So the baby's crying, and they're all, like, at the same time sort of comforting and crying with this baby. And so you know that even from the time you're an infant in this commune, everybody believes in feeling what you feel and comforting you, where contrary to our culture, it's like a baby's crying. It's like, what do we do to get it to stop?
Right, right.
And with them, it was like, no, feel what the child is feeling. And one of the characters actually has dialogue with Danny, the main character, and talks to her about how he lost his parents, but he never felt alone because he was raised by everyone in the village. So,
and Danny kind of turned into like the creepy friend, like, what are you doing? That's your bro's girlfriend. To like at the end, you're like, okay, like,
no, I was rooting for
him. Not as creepy as you thought. I mean,
no,
like,
I was rooting for him. I was like,
there's always
her.
Something in the back though where they're like, oh, well, thank you for bringing these people along with you, right, whatever your name was. And I was like, yeah, like, he's like not a horrible person, but he's kind of a horrible person. You know,
like that. And that's another way, like, you can forget about aspects like that. You can go into it seeing like, it's definitely like, oh yeah, that's a lot of bad, really bad. But
it's
there's
kind
also
of a lesser of two evils thing. It was,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
at least he has feelings.
But, and yeah, like, I don't think that was a spoiler. It's too big to say. So I'm going to stop the Midsummer stuff there. We can make more comparisons as we talk about the second part of this little podcast that I really wanted to get to. And by the way, you can listen to this on NPR One app. Hopefully, I think. Don't hold me to that. But
hold me to it.
Just make Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM your home station on the NPR One app, and it will be on. But anyways, how are you guys doing?
Great.
Great.
Still good.
Still good.
Peachy.
Still. Yeah, I know it's getting really hot in this room.
It is.
I'm about the same temperature as when I came in.
Mr. Cool Guy.
It's the sunglasses. They regulate his body temperature.
Keeps my brain working.
It keeps my brain cool. But yeah, I just wanted to open up the floor now and see some other movies or scenes, or it doesn't have to be a psychological film to have like psychological elements to it. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you guys think? Like, what's your favorite unique scare movies? So open it up.
I love A Cure for Wellness.
Oh, A Cure for
I gotta watch that movie again.
The movie's so good.
I own it.
It's
that's not the one with Jim Carrey, is it?
No.
Yeah, it is. Wait, no, it's not.
No. No.
No, it's
I don't
not.
Know
it's that one
that
Danish dude.
Yeah, it's. Here's the problem. I love A Cure for Wellness, and I know I love A Cure for Wellness. I don't remember a thing about it. I just know it's such a good movie. It's so stupid.
That's what he brought to the podcast. This movie is fantastic. Can't tell you a thing about it.
Oh, Shutter Island. Shutter Island. Come on.
Oh, Shutter Island is...
Never seen it.
Really?
I feel like it's...
It's like...
That's like the...
Like, it's like a noir film.
Well, it's like one of those movies, just like The Sixth Sense or The Others,
yeah,
where like once you know what the deal is, like, you almost don't even want to go through the journey at that point.
I'd say it's
like
two
in the
viewings.
Back,
the first viewing to be surprised by the climax, the second viewing to notice, oh, crap.
Like, I've known it all along.
Yeah.
It's right
true.
In front of me.
I feel like it's like the basic people psychological thriller. Like, you'd be like, it's just saying.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I liked it.
I love psychological horror. Okay, what's your favorite psychological horror film? Shutter Island. Yeah.
Oh,
geez, really?
Somebody's walking home today.
Oh, my goodness.
Somebody's getting
she
another ride home.
She went from stun to kill.
She ate the phaser's stun to kill.
Our bromance? Not anymore.
Oh,
what?
Man.
Michael.
Let's keep this to a dull roar. And settle it outside.
I feel like
after
you're not being
podcast.
Empathetic with
yeah.
me. I am going to join this commune.
So, Shutter Island. fantastic film. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, we could definitely. Oh, by the way, spoiler alert for anything else. If I had to get The Sixth Sense ruined for me like 10 years later in a Lonely Island song, you're all getting it ruined too. So I won't ruin it, but I'm just saying.
Oh, the end of the movie where Bruce Willis is Kaiser Sose? Nobody got that reference.
Nobody gets the joke.
I've never seen the movie.
You've never
I don't
seen
know
the
who
usual
serves
suspects.
It.
Yeah, no, nobody's ever seen The Usual Suspects. You're the only person. Period.
Okay, whatever. Somebody out there will laugh.
I've seen Usual Suspects.
out of the people that'll see this, hopefully. But Shutter Island. It's a definitely puts you. It's not the
most in depth. You know, it's pretty basic, but
it's not like. Like jump scares. Like it's definitely.
That's not the point of psychological horror, though.
No,
that's what I was saying. Yeah, that's the whole point of it. Like, no jump scares, like, not really like.
Oh, we really got to see Beyond the Black Rainbow. That's so
you
high
keep bringing
on
it
also
up.
The island.
Man.
The island.
Or, no, I'm sorry, not the island. The lighthouse.
The lighthouse.
Starring Robert Pattinson and William Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe and two of the creepiest pale men in the whole wide world
is,
in one film.
That is definitely a
everybody
duo.
Everybody I've seen talk about that says it is fantastic.
You said The Watchtower?
Yeah, The Lighthouse.
The White House.
Yes, The White House.
Also scary.
I love me some lighthouses, though.
Yes.
Like, that's end goal. End goal for me is a lighthouse.
Here's the thing. It's
live in one?
Live in one.
Here's the thing. The lighthouse is shot in black and white on film. It's a 1.5:1 ratio, so it's almost a square, and it's literally only Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe in it.
What?
That's it. Those are the only
Why
two people
Why have I never
in it.
Heard of this movie?
It's literally the only two people in there.
What?
That sounds like my nightmare.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Robert Pattinson?
Oh, wait. Hold on. Here's the best part. Willem Dafoe plays like a comical pirate in it. Like he's a swarthy seaman, dude.
All right, no and more spoilers.
And it's like
that's his character.
You'll probably know that in the first 2 seconds of the film. It's like a psychological horror.
Yeah,
I'll definitely have to see that. Wow. Anyways, anyone else have anything notable?
So my favorite, actually, Joey and I. It's so weird calling you Joey.
Oh, I was like, who's Joey? I don't know.
Oh,
the Babadook. I didn't like
but,
that one.
The Babadook.
I didn't like the Babadook.
I love the Babadook. Okay, we'll agree to disagree, but anyway. Yeah. Dang, me
just
and
like
Mike are really going at it.
Just like how you're not getting the ride home anymore.
Oh,
man.
My favorite psychological horror film is Rosemary's Baby, and I know you and I share
that. Yeah, that was...
Yeah, and this, in actually, Midsommar is getting a lot of comparisons to Rosemary's Baby, and I think
really? It's... We were the first to say it.
we were the first, I bet you we were. But I feel like it is... Because of the female lead, and
I didn't even think of that.
This might be a spoiler. I don't know.
Rosemary's Baby, or
no, to Midsommar. If I say this,
you could say it.
The eventual sympathy with the group that's supposed to be the villain in the end is really what gives you that comparison. The reason I love Rosemary's Baby though is because I find pregnancy terrifying because you can't get away from it. It's just like it's attached to you. Sorry to any listeners who are pregnant.
It's body horror is what you're saying.
It is, but it's psychological. It is a form of
pregnancy
body horror.
Pregnancy in general
is
body a form
horror.
Of body horror. Like,
but,
that is terrifying.
Yes, but it's psychological body horror. And so just, like, the idea that not only can you not get away from it, but it's also, like, half of your DNA. So
I feel like that's kind of, like, the undertones of Alien, too. Like,
yes.
Yeah,
all the birthing and, like, oof, never having anything inside me. But,
Bloodborne.
Bloodborne.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, we can definitely bring video games in this. I have a video game in my list. Do you want to talk about Bloodborne a little bit?
Oh, I mean, I don't really have much to say. I mean, other than it just has to go with the birthing and the just...
And there's a lot of, like, dark, like, because, like, Cthulhu and, like, what's his name?
H.P. Lovecraft?
Yeah, H.P. Lovecraft. Oh. Jeez. He's my favorite guy. But there's a lot of Lovecraftian like elements, like gothic elements of Bloodborne. And what I love about Lovecraft and his sort of psychological horror, it's almost this I can compare it to like Midsommar.
Well, absolutely. All the mythology in there. You could
Not only the mythology, but like how, the way he describes, like, oh, no, that's Poe, I think. Well, anyways. The way he describes
indescribable things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You or get like, an F in Miss Dukes' literature course.
The one that he he's trapped in a cave. I forgot what it was.
Oh, man. Because I ruined that for you. Remember that?
Oh, my gosh.
I ruined it.
How much time we got left? Yeah. Skylar Roth could ruin that for me. Basically.
What's my last name?
Oh, I completely forgot. I did not do that on purpose. No, but in the story, this man gets trapped in a cave. And as you know, cave has zero light in it. Mm-hmm. So he's completely blind. And I think he's in there for the span of a few hours. And he starts going insane. He hears
hearing all these noises.
And like,
I think that is Lovecraft.
Yeah, Lovecraft. That one's definitely Lovecraft. Mm-hmm. But like, he goes through it and he's like, oh, man, what's that noise? And then he describes like, his 0 to 100, no, that can't be anyone. They're all left. Wait, is that like a bat or something? No, it's too big to be a bat. No, definitely too big. And then he starts like making up all this stuff. And then you find out, oh, it's another guy in the cave and he kills him. Mm-hmm. And like, just the way he goes from 0 to 100. And the way Skylar ruined that, I was reading it in the backseat of the car and he was right next to me and I was really into it. I'm like, oh crap. And then like, I'm like, oh my God. And then he laughs because it's in all caps on the final page, a man. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? And then it all came together.
He turns the page, next story. That was the last word. A man.
I was like, oh my God. That was completely ruined.
I felt real bad.
But it was a great story. What I was actually thinking of initially was Poe. I think it was called Demon, how he describes like this childhood memory that was like really vivid in his head.
I don't know if I've read that one.
And it's basically, oh, you know how we have like vivid childhood memories and whatnot, yeah. And things that like Skeeter from Doug, mm-hmm, terrified me because I had a nightmare about him. Very vivid. But the way he describes, one day he was walking in like a park and then he looks up and it's a beautiful sunny day. And then goosebumps and like dread fills him as he sees like a winged like creature that he's never seen before fly. And it's just like for a split second, but the way he describes it, it's like a short poem too, and he never forgot that. Like,
I'll read that.
It's making me very scared. But speaking of like Lovecraft and Poe and Bloodborne, I was gonna Silent Hill. Now the movies aren't the greatest. I love them because I love Silent Hill to begin with. But the video games, the way they do horror, I absolutely love.
Oh, man. Silent Hill, what, 2 is it? The one when...
Silent Hill 2 is what I have here. Yeah. Oh, like, yeah. The way, like, the ambience of it, like, ambiance. Excuse me. Sorry, I had to burp.
Silent Hill 2 is actually very close to, like, Midsommar-ish.
That's what
But flipped. Mm-hmm. Or not even flipped. No, it's the same way, but a different outcome.
Because it's definitely, like, story A... being resolved through horror story B. Like, a man is, he gets a weird letter from his deceased wife, and he goes through this creepy town, like, very creepy, very foggy, if you don't know it. Like, it's a very foggy, old, like, ghost town. And basically, when the bell rings or the siren goes off, like, body horror-esque, like, really... decrepit, gruesome, gory creatures come out and basically fight him, run him, run away from him, whatever. But he's basically, it's like sort of a metaphor of him. Spoiler alert, it turns out he assisted suicided his dying wife, and he can't cope with it because he feels more so like, actually, there are a lot of similarities because he feels very guilty for being annoyed with her.
Yeah.
Because he feels that annoyance with her just like in Midsommar. But the guy from Silent Hill is guilty about it. But he goes through and he's like feeling really guilty. And this whole game is like a horror film, but acting out this Shakespearean play.
Interesting. That's what I love about The Babadook, though, is because everything is a metaphor for grief. really. At
I only seen that once, and it was definitely so shocking good. To me. I couldn't really like pick it apart.
Why? Can you guys explain to me why you weren't the biggest fans? Because I just want to know.
I liked it, but I didn't like pick it apart. Like I was just I was more so laughing at it.
Why? What?
It was a great film, but like there's a lot. I think I've seen it like with Skyler.
Not that the movie's bad. It's just like it wasn't like The Thing or any of like the greats where I was like, man, that was a super good movie. Like it was decent and it got a lot of like shock value and it did its own thing. Like it didn't like follow cookie cutter really type things, which is where I gave it my little nod of the hat. Okay, like you get a pass, but I'm not gonna praise a movie that wasn't that good in my eyes.
Well, I think for me, like, and this is why I think it could be related to Midsommar, is that it, that idea about like the, it is a metaphor for grief. Like the the monster is in it is not really, if you think about it, at the end of the day, it's not a monster.
I forgot like the main story of it. Like, didn't the father?
So she was in labor. That's probably why I'm horrified. She was in labor. And they were on their way to the hospital, and her husband, they're in a car accident, and her husband is killed. Okay. And she has to basically give birth at this accident scene.
There's definitely some parallels there.
Definitely. And then she gives birth to this child who presumably has special needs, and he annoys her. And so it's, again, this idea that she creates a monster out of her grief and out of her insomnia and out of her guilt for being annoyed with her child.
Huh.
So that's why
those
I'm drawing all
these. Those
are
three very concise things that we just randomly thought of. Silent Hill, Babadook, and Midsommar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of us. But another thing that that was a very unique scare in my eyes that wasn't like a jump scare, but it did play off the trope of like, something's coming, which is the elevator scene from Annabelle, I believe.
Oh, love.
And if you don't know the scene, it's basically her trying to get away from, she's running from like a demon or something, isn't she?
It's like literally Satan.
Yeah. And like she goes in the elevator and closes it and she's like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to get away. But then it slowly opens to the same floor. So she's like panically pushing the button and then it closes very slowly and like, oh, thank gosh. And then
right
it opens
back
right back and you're like, oh.
Good Lord.
And you don't
yeah.
see anything. Like
nothing
really,
changes.
Yeah, nothing changes and nothing like jumps out of you. It's just the anticipation kills. Like there's so much
you're
stress.
Waiting for it to happen.
Well, and you can't get away. And that's what I love about James Wan films is like, there's a scene in The Conjuring where you finally see Bathsheba or whatever, I think that was the demon's name. You finally see her standing on top of the chest. I'm just going to act it out in the studio, even though this is a podcast. And she's on top of the chest looking at you. And instead of just the camera focusing on it and you jump and calling it a day, the camera focuses on it and then it pans in three times, so you can't get away from it because your natural reaction is to look away. Mm-hmm. But when you look back, it's still there. And then you look away again, and you look back, and it's still there. And he creates that same feeling with Annabelle where you can't get away. Mm-hmm. And that's what there was a body horror scene in Midsommar where it went on for like 2 whole minutes, and I was like, Skyler, is it over yet? Is it over yet?
The thing I liked about the way they did that in Midsommar, too, was there were, I'm not going to spoil anything, there was two people, and what happened to the first person happened, and there was a whole second person that you knew exactly what was going to happen.
But it happens so different.
But it happens, and it's different, but it's almost like the elevator scene, like, oh gosh, this has, like, it's a gruesome scene for the first person, and then, like, oh God, I gotta go through that all again, like, oh, duh.
Yeah, because they don't just, like, show it to you and then go, well, you know what happens to person B.
Yeah.
It shows you exactly
what
happens.
And that's
what
movies usually
B.
do. Like, person A happens, something happens, like, freak out, and then end of scene.
And then even after person B happens, it continues for 5 more minutes explaining. In, like, telling you more about it and why.
Well, and then they have this important dialogue going on while this gruesome scene is happening. So it's like, well, shoot, now I've got to look at this and listen. And so I was just like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, is it over? Is it over? Is it over?
It's very interesting.
Yes.
And it keeps you interested and it makes you go through things that you probably don't want to do, but you got to if you want to understand the film.
Oh, guys, I made my poor dad see this movie, and he called me and was like, Alexia! I was like, what, you didn't like it? Sorry, Mike.
Oh, I was going to say, I like things that happen in the background of movies, like little things. Like one that springs to mind is The Exorcist, the original. It doesn't happen so much in like the re-releases, but in the original, there's parts where like you'd see darkness, like half the frame is covered by darkness, and like the other half is like the door, and you'd see like just a slow Pazuzu like fade in.
Pazuzu.
That or that kills me when they do that.
Or there's a scene where
slow burn.
The mom is walking through the kitchen, and Pazuzu's actually in the reflection on the stove.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not notice.
Yeah.
That.
Or what's another one? This one's kind of more of a jump scare. It's from The Ring, where. There's a scene where the main character is in a farmer's house, and it just shows her, but in the background a light passes and the farmer's directly behind her.
Yeah,
it doesn't
I remember
like
that one.
There's no music or anything. It's just a subtle like.
That's ooh. Like It Follows when that big hulking dude comes down the hall.
Like,
that's the worst.
No scary violins, no jumping, no shrieking, just a dude walking up to the door.
And it was barely a jump scare because it doesn't like hit you because you see. Him come in.
You're like, oh, what is that? What is that? What is that?
He comes in. No, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, keeps
coming.
Oh, is that him? Ooh.
And
I'll get goosebumps. I'm scared.
One thing about It Follows, too, is like the ambiguity at the end. Like when you see the two characters walking at the end,
there's a person following
them. Yep, there's a person following
them. Like 20 feet, 30
feet back.
I felt
like that movie was such a PSA. Like I want to show it to all of my students and be like, if you do anything naughty this summer, this is what will happen to you.
Oh my God.
like be
big,
the
giant man.
Just be like the coach for Mean Girls. Like you will get pregnant and die.
Oh man.
Yeah, just little scares in the background of things. Like when it's not the focus, but you see it and you know it's there.
I absolutely love it. And it very much scares me.
I have to say, thinking about It Follows and It, and thinking about Midsommar and the age groups that those movies are focusing on, I love that horror films lately have been focusing on like children and millennials and just
like younger people,
younger people, and just like the things that you know younger people.
Well, it's kind of always been a
Like it was made back in the day.
Well, even like Halloween.
That's true.
Teenagers of its time.
Halloween is my second most favorite film.
Even new, like the newest, the 11th installment of Friday the 13th.
The 11th
installment.
That was also like still like, what, 20-year-olds? Like, the movies kind of stay the same, you know, as far as
that's the age group that
they're going for. It's always going to be like teens to 20-somethings.
I also feel like in the 80s, there was a lot of focus on teens to 20-somethings, and it seemed like when we were kids, there was a lot of, like, family horror, especially, like, 2010, 2009, like, around there, like, a lot of, like, marriage horror and family horror. So, like, Paranormal Activity became, like, a big craze around, like, when we were all in high school, and there was a lot of focus on, oh, these people just got married. Oh, here's a family, and here's a, The Haunting in Connecticut was another one where it was focusing on familial horror and divorces and this and that, and that went on for what seemed like a really long time, and now I feel like there's definitely a return to focusing on.
That's probably why marriage is like down, numbers are down.
Yeah,
all
it's
these
the horror
movies about like these fine families, because it's not always as it seems. Mm-hmm. But I would like to thank you all for joining me in this magical world of podcasting.
Thank you for having me.
On Raging Nerd Alert.
Thank you for having me.
No problem.
It's been
problem.
Real.
It has been very real. I hope you guys see the movie, Midsommar.
See it.
It is
see it.
Worth the 2.5 hours. Trust me, it's a fantastic film. And you can catch this podcast online in PR1. Make Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM your home station. You can hear all the great media coming out of this studio. Very talented.
All of it.
But I just wanted to say thank you all again, and thank you for listening.